The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hronko Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hronko Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Hronko's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut up. On behalf of Hronko Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you!
Welcome to Politics Lobby 4. Please remain seated. Extinguish all smoking materials. And prepare yourself for the truth. The Politics Cafe. Frontline with Kit Jarrow. The Extreme Court. Try to remain calm. This is your last warning. Welcome to Politics Lobby 4.
Boy, I have just a little problem here. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world. Welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And yes, we have some fresh topics again this week, folks. As always, welcome back. Glad to see everybody on board. We have a special guest here tonight. A few other things. First and foremost, though, congratulations must go out to the Boston Red Sox. Guys, you did a great job sweeping the Colorado Rockies. I watched all the games. I had so much fun. As you guys all know, I'm originally from Philadelphia. I'm a transplant up here in New England. But I have become a Red Sox fan, no doubt about it. Watching them boys play, they took the game of baseball to new heights. Showed how much fun it could be, showed how well you could mix veterans with young guys, and just put together one heck of a ball club. And they just really did it. I've never been so proud to be a fan of any team. Just a wonderful banner day for New England sports here yesterday. On top of that, of course, we our Patriots put a crushing blow to the Washington Redskins, 52-7. And it's we're already touting next week's game as the Super Bowl. Two undefeated teams. It will be Indianapolis Colts and the New England Patriots next Sunday. Kind of can't wait for that. But anyway, you know, enough said about you guys. Congratulations once again. Tonight we got a few things that are gonna I'm gonna cook through in the news here, but we're gonna hold them off for later because we have a very special guest here tonight. As you folks remember, a few times in the past we've had David from the Jewish Task Force, www.jtf.org, big organization down out of New York City. Lots of publications, lots of really good videos on their website. These gentlemen are right-wingers to the max, fellas. Anybody out there has ever been making the mistake of thinking that we might mix a little bit, that we deal with a lot of moderates, or blah, 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 or, you know, that there might be some liberals out there, or to even get the small inkling that we might be anti-Semitic? Well, we're here to put all those fears to rest tonight. All right? We have Chaim Ben Pesach is his name. And he's a great guy. Got a chance to talk to him just a little bit before the show here tonight. He's got a few things he'd like to say out there. He's going to speak a little bit about Islamic terrorism. One of my big topics out here, you know, biggest threat in the whole world today facing us. But these gentlemen are, you know, very, very good people, good Americans, great Americans, I'm going to say. And you know, there'll be a little question and answers for him later. But first, I would like to introduce... and I hope I'm saying this right, Chaim Ben Pesach. Please, how about stepping up to the mic? Tell us a little bit about yourself, your organization, and what your goals are, your mission, and all the good stuff. And we'll start off with you there, and I'll take it away after your statement. You are on board. You don't have to put your hand up, but I will release the mic to you.
Thank you very much. And the name is Chaim Ben Pesach. It's a difficult name to pronounce. It's Hebrew, so it's a difficult name to pronounce. But I want to thank you for the great introduction. The Jewish Task Force, JTF, first of all, although it's an organization founded by Jews, most of our members are not Jewish. Most of our members are righteous Gentiles, right-wing righteous Gentiles who want to save America, Israel, and Western civilization. We welcome all decent people. Our goal is to save this country from the catastrophe that we are facing. And we are facing a catastrophe. And the catastrophe comes in many forms. Islamic terrorism, of course, is just one of the aspects. We have a very, very serious problem with Islam, with the fact that the politically correct in this country refuse to identify our enemy. Our enemy is not terrorism or terrorists. Our enemy is the Islamic religion, which preaches the extermination of all non-Muslim infidels and the forcible conversion of all non-Muslim infidels. We urgently must build a massive right-wing movement now to save America. A right-wing movement that will be uncompromising and that is opposed to opening up our borders to tens of millions of third-world people who are flooding into this country and who are demographically endangering the very future of the United States. We have to have an urgent crash program of energy independence. We have to have an urgent program in this country of making Americans proud to be Americans again and patriotic again. And we have to have an urgent program in the United States of America of understanding that the United States of America is a nation that must live by the moral principles of the founding fathers. And so we have an agenda and a program. During the next year, our main focus is going to be defeating Hillary Sodom Clinton, because we view this as an emergency, a national emergency. If she becomes president of the United States, this country will face the prospect, in my opinion, of Islamic nuclear holocaust doctrine, because Iran will develop nuclear bombs. She will never take military action against Iran. And if she becomes president of the United States, I believe there is a very serious threat of an Islamic nuclear holocaust against the United States. Not only will she do nothing to stop the Iranian Muslim terrorist regime from developing nuclear bombs, she will even pressure heroic little Israel not to take military action. So it is essential, even though we're not happy with the Republican candidates, but we have to vote for the Republicans and we have to defeat her, because this is a matter of national survival. Anyway, mic is going off now, and we're going back.
All right. Well, that's very good. Now we're with you here as far as defeating Hillary. There's no doubt about it. I personally have put a call out there to last week's show, pretty much on just that subject. You know, I'm making the large plea at this point in time for everyone to stop enabling our destroyers. You know, throughout history here, you know, the right wing has constantly been besieged by the left wing. And it's only been the last 50 or 60 years we've actually been supporting them. You know, we do not fight back when they go for tax hikes. We do not fight back when they go for to set up different programs out there, when they start funding the arts, and they start funding dance companies, and they start funding social programs, and then idiocy. You know, Hillary out there now wants to fund daycare for every kid in America, just to make sure, and then somehow or another plans to create jobs for all of the mothers who will be no longer taking care of their kids at home, or putting them in daycare. So what I'm saying is, hey, I think everybody between now and next November, we got a whole year to do it, save up enough money to get you through a whole month, and then just take the month off. No more tax money for them. None of that business whatsoever. Heck with them. We will stop enabling our producers for a while. But given that you're just as bad, you feel it pretty much the same way about Hillary as I do, tell me something. And I know you've got your problems with all the right-wing candidates. But at this point in time, who is it that you're actually supporting? Who would you get behind and give a push to and say, yep, if it's got to be any of them, this is the guy I would like to see? Give me some idea. Any, you know, who is it you think you'd like to see in there? You lost the mic there again, didn't you? David, give him a hand there, see if you can get him working up with the mic.
All right. We get a little bit. I guess we're having a little bit of a technical glitch over on end there. But my buddy David is on hand. And David, when you're ready, put your hand back up, and we'll see if we can't get it working again here. But it's kind of important. You know, we were starting to talk a lot here before the show, and we've had a lot of controversy flying back and forth in the room here, which, by the way, we are broadcasting from Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders Voice Room over on Pal Talk. Folks out there listening, if you'd like to download Pal Talk and join the show, you're more than welcome to. We are under Social Issues and Politics. This is a G room, and you'll find it. It's called Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders. All right, I'm still waiting to see your hand come back up there. I don't know, it looks like JTF just dropped right out. Maybe we'll get David back in here and get Chaim back in. I wish I could say that. There's a certain syllable right there that I've just never made before. So, yeah, you've got to have to get some practice with that. But one of the things we were talking about earlier on here, okay, good, get your hand back up. Looks like you got it working. So tell me, out of all the candidates that you have, that we have so far, are there any of them there that you could endorse?
Yeah, first of all, I want to apologize for that technical glitch we just had. For some reason, just froze up on us. I'm not happy with any of the major Republican candidates. I like Duncan Hunter, but he has zero chance of winning. And I like a lot of things about Tom Tancredo, but he also has no chance of winning. Among the candidates that have a real chance of winning, I have tremendous problems with all of them. Because I'm a real right-winger, and it's a real problem. Rudy Giuliani, of course, I'm pro-life, and we're all pro-life, and he has supported abortion. And we could go through a whole list of the things that he's done. John McCain, together with Ted Kennedy, is the biggest advocate of opening up our borders. He's a catastrophe. Mitt Romney was always a leftist, ran to the left of Ted Kennedy when he ran for the U.S. Senate in 1994. As far as Mike Huckabee is concerned, major, major problems with him. He raised taxes when he was governor. He let a convicted rapist. He let a convicted rapist out of prison, who then went and murdered and raped another woman in Missouri. The major problems, and he says he wants parole for convicted violent felons now, which we don't have in the federal criminal justice system. He wants to introduce that again. So there are major, major problems. One of the problems that we have is that the politically correct have taken control of both Republican candidates that are running, if they win the Republican nomination, as a lesser of the evils against Hillary Clinton. We don't have any choice. We will do it. We don't have any choice. But having said that, that doesn't mean that we're happy with the field as it exists now. The field as it exists now is a field that is very problematic. I don't know. By the way, I don't know why I'm having. I hope you're hearing me now. I'm hearing some advertising now. Okay, I guess you're hearing me again. Okay, I heard some advertising. You're hearing me. Okay. Anyway, what I wanted to say is that again, the Republican candidates, there are major problems with all of the Republican. It's all? Okay. The Republican, as I was saying, we're having a couple of technical problems here, but the Republican candidates, the reason there is a problem with that is because the multinational corporations, unfortunately, have control of both of our major parties. Our short-term goal will be to defeat Hillary Sodom Clinton. That is our short-term goal. But our long-term goal is to create a situation in the future where finally we will have Republican candidates that we can enthusiastically support. And it is doable. Remember, the supporters of Barry Goldwater in 1964 and the supporters of Ronald Reagan in 1980 took control of the Republican Party against the will of the Republican Party establishment. The Republican Party establishment was against them. And they, nevertheless, were able to take control of the Republican Party. So it is doable if we organize a movement. If we just had several million people who wanted to be part of a movement to do this, we would control and dominate the Iowa caucuses, the New Hampshire primary, and all of the other basic the primaries and caucuses and the entire system. We would be able to nominate the Republican candidate we want if we just had a few million people that were involved. That's the key. We must build a mass movement, and that's our long-term goal. But in the meantime, we've got this emergency situation coming up because next November, God forbid, Hillary Clinton might get elected. As far as which of the Republican candidates I prefer, It's hard for me to say right now. I can't stand any of them. Rudy Giuliani is probably the most electable, but I have major problems with all of them. And whoever wins, we're going to find out after Iowa, New Hampshire, whoever wins. And whoever does win the Republican nomination, we're going to be forced to support them.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right in a way, that's for sure. I mean, we're all looking at it that way. You know, basically, Hillary—it's keeping Hillary out is more important than anything else. And, you know, I guess we're pretty much looking at it as we're going to have to deal. Well, a little surprise for you. There's a lot of Duncan Hunter supporters in this room, and we plan to help him kick his campaign off quite a bit. You know, this room has been moved. It's moving quite a bit around the room. We sent out a lot of faxes, got a lot of things done when it came to the border issue. To opening up. Now, there's a lot of this being snuck through Congress as we speak here, and it's, you know, being backdoored in, I guess is the way to say. You know, little bits and pieces are coming in, riders on other bills. So far, it looks like the president's going to veto a lot of this, but it's, you know, where do we go from there? You know, that's the tough part, I got to say. Listen, at any rate, I think one of our other guests here has got his hand up for you and would like to ask you a question. So I'm going to yield the mic to him. Mind work, it's all yours.
No, it's not so much as a question. And good evening, baby. Good evening, David. It's more along the lines of a statement. I think that anybody in their state whose electorate is running for president is going to be skewed to that man or woman. The thing I'm saying is this. Everybody's going to find something or a few things they don't agree with on any candidate thrown up before them, because this is the time where speculation is everything. Everything we do is basically just speculation. We don't know what any of these candidates are going to do wherever they reach their goal. When they get in, that's when we usually know. We can hope that the candidate running is going to represent our party well. We've seen how the other party's representatives handled their party. I still say we're tops on that. Much less brush under our tree, so to speak. I'm happy with the candidates. I recognize them as men and men with faults. And woman with fault. That's my conundrum with all this political debate. David, what do you think? How do you settle it when push comes to shove? How do you make your choice?
Okay, thank you for the question. By the way, I'm Chaim Ben Pesach. David Ben Moshe was a guest before, but I'm Chaim. That's fine. There's no problem. My choice is based upon what is best for the United States of America and for Israel and for Western civilization. What will be best to make this a better world? And in my opinion, we have more than just minor problems or disagreements with the Republican candidates. We have a basic problem. Look at George Bush. George Bush wants to open up our borders and did try to legalize all the illegal aliens. John McCain has co-sponsored the legislation with Ted Kennedy to do that. So we've got a very serious problem here. We've got a very serious problem here, and to ignore it would be something that we do to our peril. I believe that both the Democrats and the Republicans are leading us down the road to self-destruction and national suicide. The Democrats will get us there much more quickly, and therefore we have no choice. We have no choice but to support the Republican candidate, and we are going to support the Republican candidate. But let's be very clear about something. We saw from the Bush presidency a president who advocated legalizing all illegal aliens, a president who has not stopped the Iranian nuclear terrorist bomb-making program. That program should be stopped, and there is only a military solution to that program, for that problem. We have a president who has done nothing to make us energy independent. We are giving hundreds of billions of dollars every year to the Muslim Nazi terrorist nations that are committed to our destruction. We are funding Iran. We are funding the Saudi Arabian terrorist regime. We funded the 9/11 bombers by buying oil from Saudi Arabia. We must become energy independent. We must end illegal immigration. and third world immigration into this country. We must defend America's borders. We must stand up against those who want to destroy the United States of America. We must have a president who is principled and who stands for something again. And so those are major differences, major philosophical differences with Republican candidates. And yes, they're better than the Democrats. Republicans are better than Democrats. But let's never forget something. Supporting, when you support a lesser of the evils, you're still supporting evil. We've got a very serious problem in this country, and I believe that letting tens of millions of illegal aliens into the United States and allowing them to eventually become a majority of the American population, I believe that policy is evil and national suicide. So we have some very serious problems, but our goal is to build a party, a Republican Party, to build a movement within the Republican Party that will eventually take over the Republican Party and that will eventually restore genuine American principles. And I do believe that that is also, we can prove, when we prove with Ronald Reagan, that is a winning formula as well, if only we finally had Republican candidates that stood for something. But until next November, we're going to work against Hillary Clinton. We're going to form a group that is going to work against her, and our goal is going to be to alert the American people to what a catastrophe, what a nightmare this will be. I think the very survival of the United States, and I really believe this is no exaggeration, I believe the very survival of the United States is endangered by the prospect of her becoming president, and I think she has at least a 50-50 chance, God forbid, of getting elected. Okay, Mike is going back.
All right. Very definitive. I like the way you put that. Mr. Pillman, you've got your hand up. Mike is all yours, bud.
Well, I wanted to bring up Giuliani. A lot of us are unhappy with what Bush has been doing. You know, he's been talking the talk, but he hasn't been walking the walk, so to speak. You know, we've been fighting this war in Iraq, but, you know, he keeps bringing up the Iran situation. I'm curious if he will actually do anything about it. The same with this illegal immigration and granting amnesty to the illegals. Then, of course, the roadmap to peace, partitioning Israel and trying to create a so-called Palestinian state. Now, if Giuliani gets into office, what is to guarantee that he will actually take action against Iran? Or what's to say that he wouldn't fund a supposed Palestinian state? I mean, George Bush has sent money to the Palestinians in the past. I mean, in specific, that's one of my concerns about Giuliani, is that he'll stick true to his word. Because I'm very skeptical about his stance on if he supports a so-called Palestinian state. I'm skeptical about many of his issues regarding gun control and, of course, illegal immigration. I mean, what do we do if he ends up doing the same thing that George Bush did, except, you know, we have a George Bush on steroids?
Well, I agree, first of all, with you about Rudy Giuliani. I think that you're 100% correct about him and about all the Republican candidates. It's a very serious problem. Rudy Giuliani was a very effective mayor of New York City, so he does get things done, which I don't believe is true for George Bush. I think George Bush is an ineffective leader and has been a disastrous president, in my opinion. But I think that Rudy Giuliani at least knows how to be a leader. But you're right. We cannot trust these people because they have an agenda that is not the appropriate agenda. And there is no way of knowing if he's going to take the necessary action against Iran. We don't really know that. We don't know if he's going to betray Israel and demand that Israel create an independent PLO-Hamas Muslim terrorist state. By the way, the term Palestinian is used frequently. Historically, there is no such thing as a Palestinian people or Palestine. Until the 1960s, no one claimed that there's a Palestinian Arab people. This is just a myth. I mean, it's just a complete myth. There is no Palestine. There are no Palestinians. These are Arabs. And this is just one of the myths that was created against Israel. But the danger that he will pressure little Israel to vivisect herself and to commit national suicide is also a very real danger. And by the way, that is an issue that all Jews and all Gentiles have to be concerned about, because we have to remember what it says in the Bible. I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. The key to the future of the whole world is in that little country, that heroic little nation in the Holy Land. Now, the future of the whole world can be found in what happens to little Israel. God called Israel the apple of his eye, and what we do to Israel will affect very much the future of the United States of America. So there's no question Giuliani may betray us on Israel, and he may not take action on Iran. The difference is, at least with him, at least with him, at least with Giuliani and the Republicans, there's some hope that they will do something. They're claiming, Giuliani is promising that he will not allow, under any circumstances, the Iranians to develop nuclear weapons and will take military action if necessary. He is making that commitment. At least with him, there's some hope, and at least with him, there's a Republican base that will pressure him to do the right thing. With Hillary Clinton, we have none of that. There is no chance she's going to take action to save us from an Iranian Muslim terrorist threat. There is no chance. When her and her husband polluted the office of the White House, when her and her husband polluted the sacred Oval Office during the 8 years that they were in office and cursed this country with their presence in the White House, her and her husband allowed North Korea and Pakistan to develop nuclear bombs. They negotiated with them. People warned that the Pakistanis and the North Koreans are lying to us, that they're cheating. And they insisted, no, we're going to negotiate. Diplomacy is the way. They gave them aid. They were assisting them. And Pakistan and North Korea lied and developed the nuclear bombs. And the Clintons continue to support them. So, and Hillary Clinton is already saying she's going to do the same exact thing with Iran that her and her husband did with Pakistan and North Korea. Negotiate, give them aid, offer them incentives, let them stall until they finish building the nuclear bomb. She's going to do the same thing with Iran. The difference is with Iran, we're talking about a regime of complete lunatics who really believe, and they really do believe this. My family lived for hundreds of years in Egypt, so I can tell you I know a lot about Muslims and Islam. The Muslims really in Iran, the Muslim dictators of Iran, really believe that Allah will protect them and bless them if they set off nuclear bombs in the United States. They really believe that, and they are willing. They are ready and willing to take retaliation if necessary. Of course, they're going to try to do deniability. They're going to give the weapons to Islamic terrorist organizations that they're sponsoring and then claim we had nothing to do with it. But they're willing to take their chances. They really mean it. They are not joking. The Ayatollahs and the Mullahs and the Imams that run Iran will set off nuclear bombs if we allow them to get nuclear bombs. They will set them off in American cities. I mean, we are in grave danger, and Hillary Clinton will never do anything about that. Never take action against them. And so the danger here is enormous if she becomes president. With her, we're certain to have catastrophe. At least with the Republicans, we have some hope of avoiding some of these catastrophes. And for that reason, I think we have no choice but to support the Republican nominee against her. Microphone's going back.
All right, thanks. I feel exactly the same way. You know, there is no doubt. I mean, Iran's stated intentions are clear. They want a monotheistic world free of decadence and sinners. I'm sorry, but I read that anybody that isn't Muslim. You know, they look at us as being part of the monotheistic part of things. I mean, Christians and Jews. But as far as they're concerned, we are the decadent, we are the sinners. Now, I want to push this in a little bit of a different direction here. And I think one of the things that's going to help out any of the Republican candidates down the road is if they start thinking again, and especially rethinking the social issues thing. Now, it has been my contention right from the get-go and right through years of me broadcasting and saying what I've been saying on the internet and in chat rooms, what I've written, that any social program out there is a product of some faith or another. Now, whether you believe in God or whether you believe in the God of the common good or the God of something greater than yourself or whatever it is, for whatever reason that you have out there, the contention that man is responsible for his brother has always been a religious or a faith-based one. Any way you look at it, I mean, it's still, at the bottom line, it's faith. Now, whether you have that faith or not, you know, you have to sit down and agree that the premise is a faith-based kind of thing. And I, for one, as a Catholic, and I'll be honest with you, I'm a Roman Catholic, am firmly believing that what the socialists are trying to do out there is basically put us out of a job. You know, as church-going people, you know, I look at through the last couple of centuries here of all the hospitals that have been built, all the schools that have been built, all the old age homes, all the orphanages, and every one of them has got either a saint's name attached to it, some angel's name, the Blessed Mother's name, or another Jewish name that I can't pronounce. You know, I mean, take a look at some of the great Jewish heart centers there are down there. Look at I'm trying to think of the big one that's down in New York City. There's another one up here in the Berkshires. There's, you know, and the other people are famous for it. And it's because, you know, they've gotten together, that people who are of these faiths have realized the need for this, realized the fact that you cannot just go out there and demand that the people support this and point a gun at their heads and say, here, this is what we're going to do. You're going to have to go along. No, they had their own ways of cajoling or otherwise putting the ambition into people to perform the good works that need to be done. Now, I think that the presidential candidate who comes along and says, I'm more than willing to allow someone to take up to 10% of his pre-tax earnings and put it into his faith in return for his faith performing the social services that he may need, taking care of the poor, taking care of the sick, taking care of the elderly, taking care of orphans and whatnot, if the church will pick up and move that. By church, I mean synagogue, what have you. You know, or even if you are atheistic or agnostic, to get together with those of your own kind and do the same thing. You know, this has been basically the church's job through, you know, all of its existence. The Bible states clearly to the Jews to remember the widow and orphan amongst you. Let me ask you this. Do you think it's worthwhile for us to really get behind our religious leaders and push them back into the role of taking over the social services and just take it away from the Democrats? Just take the whole idea of performing social services by the government totally away from the Democrats, putting it back into the hands of the churches, and building it up to such a point where the government doesn't even have to get involved because it's like maybe it's already being handled. You know, do you think that this is a workable idea? Do you think it's something that you would go with? And do you think it's something that if we can get a presidential candidate to get behind, that perhaps guys like you and me, we could go to our churches and give them a boot in the rear end and say, hey, we're dropping the ball here, and the Democrats are taking away our job. They're basically taking our issues away from us and leaving us powerless. Do you think it's worthwhile? It's basically what I'm asking. Would you get behind something like that?
Yes, of course. I mean, I agree 100% with you. I think that the role of helping people in our society, and it is our obligation to help people who are less fortunate than us, the role is something that should be done by private citizens. I don't believe the role is the role of big government. I think one of the problems we're going to face, and I agree with you, religious leaders should be a part of the equation, and religious leaders should be leading this effort. I think one of the problems is politicians don't want to surrender the power that they have. They love taxing us. They love spending. Because then, when you need something, you've got to go to them. You need to go to your congressman or your senator, and you need them. And they love having that power. They don't want to surrender that power. And so we have a conflict here. We have a clash between the interests of the American people and the interests of the politicians who run the establishment in Washington. And that's true in both parties. We saw the Republicans spending our money like drunken sailors as well. The vast majority of government programs we have are unconstitutional and should not exist and would be better performed by private citizens. I agree with you completely. And socialism, we know socialism doesn't work. We know that socialism is morally corrupting and is destroying our society. Look what socialist government has brought to this country. Look at the rates of illegitimacy and immorality, and look at the breakdown in American society. It's the decadence and the depravity and the destruction of American culture. All of this can be traced to a large measure with the role of big brother and big government taking over functions that should be functions performed by private citizens. I believe we should eliminate the income tax. We should eliminate taxes on income, on profits, and on interest. And I think that we should have just a consumer tax. And I believe that we should eliminate a great many of the government programs we have. And we must learn from history. Government programs and government solutions, generally speaking, do not work. When private people in a free society, and civilized private people in a free society, work together, that is what works.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You know, the point of the matter is here is that government is nothing more than an instrument of ultimate force. And that's all it's ever been. You know, it is, you know, it's something that we instituted to keep the peace. But as an institution, we gave it the ultimate power of ultimate force. You know, of the one that's able to quell anyone taking the offense in an aggressive posture. That's all they've ever been good for. You know, that was the only reason that we formed this government to begin with, basically to protect ourselves and to settle disputes. Period. You know, it was never meant to take on the role of a provider, playing field leveler, so to speak. You know, whatnot. And it's, you know, it's a crime that the socialists have been allowed to take this over. I mean, I think their biggest crime is the fact that they have never been able to study history, as you said. their biggest loss is, you know, it's socialism, no matter how it starts out, you know, which is usually democratically, always, but always ends up with a dictator. You know, bar none. It has never failed to do anything else, and it's, and especially the ones that have started out democratically. You know, it always comes down to a point where you cannot settle something with the vote, where it always, the issue will get, end up splitting right down the middle, and the only guy that's going to solve the problem is the one who's able to take the bull by the horns, take the blame, and be able to shove off any opposition to it. Basically, someone who can go unquestioned. You know, therefore, hence, the dictator. He arises. You know, a lot of people take a look at Hitler in the last century and say, you know, well, he tried to get them all into National Socialism, and finally, after a while, he accomplished it. You know, which is a bold-faced lie. You know, Hitler was not the start of socialism in Germany in the 30s. You know, by the late 1800s, German industry was already fully socialized. You know, the people of Germany had been operating under a social system for up to 50 years. And as a result came Hitler, you know. So Hitler was not the beginner of it. He was the result of it. Same thing with a guy like Joseph Stalin. You know, you can go right back and take a look at the book Animal Farm and see exactly where Joseph Stalin came from. You know, despite all the cries for equality and the working class and the bourgeois and all the blah, blah, blah that Lenin put out. You know, Lenin won his revolution with ideals, but face it, it took a dictator like Stalin to solidify it. You know, and it's always an altruistic purpose that these people have behind it. But I think the whole realm of altruism belongs in the church, belongs to people who were voluntarily doing it. You know, none of these social services ever were performed by anybody without some measure of sacrifice. But that sacrifice is something that has to come voluntarily. It cannot come because some government is pointing a gun at your head somewhere. You know, and it's absolutely no good. I mean, I take a look at the Catholic hospital that I was born in. You know, it's not so much that way now because, of course, all the government intervention since the 80s. You know, actually, it goes before that when they took over Blue Cross and Blue Shield years ago and told them how they could run their business. I think it was always the beginning of it. But back then, that hospital was staffed by nuns and volunteers more than anyone else, people who basically weren't getting paid, people who were making the ultimate sacrifice for the betterment of mankind. You know, they knew their reward was going to be in heaven. They weren't looking for any earthly reward because they knew it just wasn't there. People did not have the money to do it. And yet people, you know, they still saw the need for this, and because of this, they performed that. So it's got to come back to a point where we take this out of their hands and render any help that they might want to give us useless and overlookable, so to speak. You know, make it to a point where, look, yeah, you want to put together a system for this, well, that's fine. But we really don't need it. We've already got something going without you. And I think that's the way it has to go. All right, Mr. Pillman, you've got your hand up there. Go right ahead.
Okay. Hi. I wanted to bring something up. I know some people in the room had mentioned Ron Paul. And I know that you and I will probably disagree on the number one reason why we probably wouldn't vote for him is due to the fact that he appears to blame the United States foreign policy for the 9/11 attacks and feels that Iran has no obligation to give up their nuclear weapons. But you had mentioned something here about the income tax, which I thought was interesting. The 16th Amendment, if I remember correctly, was never ratified. So, effectively speaking, constitutionally speaking, then that would make income taxes illegal, which you had brought up. Since Ron Paul would not be a good candidate, though, however, I do recall a video I had seen of yours which had mentioned the foreign aid to Israel, and I had agreed with it. You know, the foreign aid that does go to Israel is being used for the wrong purposes. It's used for to make Israel do suicidal things that Israel normally wouldn't want to do, and to dismantle settlements in Judea and Samaria. But in many cases, do you think if Ron Paul were effectively became president, do you think this would do more harm to Israel, or do you think this would actually be good to Israel in some sort? Aside from the fact that he does appear to be way too sympathetic with Muslims, I'm just curious your view on him and your likes or dislikes on him.
Well, thank you for the question, and I think Ron Paul, first of all, would be a disaster for America, even before we get to Israel. Ron Paul says that if Iran wants to develop nuclear bombs, that's none of our business. This is a guy who has no understanding whatsoever about Islam, about the nature of our enemies. He has no understanding. He has no conception. Not only that, if they set off nuclear bombs in this country, God forbid, and murdered millions of Americans, he would probably say that it was actually set off by, it was actually a conspiracy, that the CIA set it off, which is what his crazy supporters have been saying about 9/11. I think he is a very dangerous phenomenon. And this is what happens when there's a vacuum on the right. The same voices on the right don't get a chance to speak when you have a vacuum on the right. And so it's a very serious problem. As far as Israel is concerned, he is against foreign aid, and of course we in JPF, we are against all foreign aid. Foreign aid is the worst thing you can give to Israel. Israel doesn't need the foreign aid. It's $3 billion a year, which is only 5% of Israel's national budget. Israel has a very healthy economy. Israel has a brilliant group of, a brilliant workforce. The Jews are a brilliant people. I mean, let's face it. Israel per capita has more scientists, more engineers, more professional people, by far than any country in the world per capita. I mean, the Jews are a fraction of a percent of the world's population, and 27% of all the Nobel Prize winners for science and for discoveries and medical discoveries and medical innovations. So the Jews are an incredibly brilliant people. Unfortunately, Israel stifles that Jewish ingenuity with a socialist system. You have socialism in Israel. And the only way that they can have a socialist system in Israel is because of the foreign aid that they get from the United States. The best favor you could do for the state of Israel is cut off all foreign aid to Israel. We should end all foreign aid to Israel. We should end all foreign aid to all countries. It's insane to give out American dollars to these countries. There should be no foreign aid anymore. It should be eliminated completely. But Ron Paul, just to answer your question, I believe that his campaign caters to anti-Semitism, and I believe that he is an anti-Semite. I believe that when he wrote that article, Neocon, where he said that the neocons are responsible for all, and neocon is his code word for Jews. He said the neocons are responsible for all the problems we have in the United States today, and then he said the neocons all support the Israeli Likud party in the article, which is complete baloney. I mean, the so-called neocons, all want Israel to create an independent PLO Hamas Muslim terrorist state in the biblical heartland of Israel. The neocons want Israel to create a PLO state, and the head of the PLO and the capital of the PLO state will be in Jerusalem. They want Israel to give up even her own capital. You know, the Arabs have more than 600 times the land that the Jews have. The Arabs have 22 gigantic Arab nations. Israel has one tiny little country. The Muslims have 65 Muslim countries with the majority of the world's oil reserves. Israel has one tiny little country, and everybody demands that little Israel give up the little land she has. And the neocons are the first ones to make that demand. George Bush is a neocon. Condoleezza Rice is a neocon. They're all pushing Israel right now to give up all the land. So when Ron Paul claims that there's this neocon conspiracy that is responsible for America's problems and it's linked to the interests of Israel, that is just a plain, outright anti-Semitic lie. And so he is very bad for Israel, and in my opinion, he is really, really bad for America. We need a sane voice on the right. One of the things Ron Paul said that was very revealing, he said, I can't understand why all these Christians support Israel. He says, I disagree with them, and I cannot understand why they feel we have to support Israel. I mean, this is someone who does not understand something. He always says, read the Constitution. I would say to him, read your Bible if you don't understand why Christians support Israel. Christians support Israel because they know that God will bless America if America blesses Israel. And the way to support Israel is just to leave Israel alone. Don't pressure Israel. Don't say give up the land. Don't give them foreign aid. Nothing. Let them be independent and let them do what they have to do. That is it. And believe me, Israel, if you have an Israel like that, if we take over in Israel, if the Kahana's Jews take over in Israel, if the supporters of Rabbi Meir Kahana take over in Israel, you will have an Israel that will not only make Israel more secure, but it will make America more secure. Because if I was in charge of Israel, Israel right now would take out that Iranian nuclear terrorist program immediately, and that would be a great blessing to the American people as well. But Ron Paul doesn't understand these things, he doesn't want to understand these things, and so I think he's a very dangerous phenomenon.
I think that's pretty well put. You're exactly right. The man has no idea. You know, what he does not see here is mankind's oldest enemy behind this. You know, you if you want to picture it as Satan or Beelzebub or whatever, I mean, you know, to me, mankind's oldest enemy has always been the idea of collectivism. It has always been that ideology. You know, Julius Caesar once said that he wished mankind had but a single neck so that he could break it. And this is exactly what they're looking to do. Unite everyone under their banner and then just break them into the into a world of slavery. You know, now whether you know whether you look at slavery as being subject to some dictator, or whether you look at slavery as being subject to the whims of a great majority or whatever, none of it works without some measure of tyranny. And there you have the ultimate tyranny. You know, you're asked to make the ultimate sacrifice, your life, and it's all baloney. But it is, it's that collectivist ideology, and that collectivist ideology has been raising its head in different forms for thousands of years. You know, witness the last century. Fascism is nothing more than a collectivist ideology. Socialism, nothing more than a collectivist ideology. Communism, probably the ultimate collectivist ideology. But all of them adversely affecting the individualism that God gave each one of us, the sovereignty that God gave each one of us to make his own way. You know, the battle out there should never have been man against man. The battle is man against nature. You know, God gave us all the tools we needed to get along and to use it and make this earth into some place that could be a utopia for everyone. Which, you know, I will be coming up with, you know, later on. You know, the whole utopian idea. I think we've built it. You know, if only they would allow it to function. But you can see what I'm getting at here. It's the whole ideology behind this that the Muslims have seemed to embrace. Or has embraced the Muslims. I don't know. You can look at it as one hand washing the other there. But either way, it is anti-ethical to any person out there who loves liberty, who loves freedom, who loves the idea of getting up in the day and attacking that day for himself. All right, Guy, what did you, whatever your name is there, my friend, the mic is all yours. Your hand is up.
Okay, thank you. Now, I'm going to try to make this quick. Because I know you guys don't like listening to me. And just call me Guy for the babe. And I'm sorry I accidentally tried to mic jump. That was my finger. It slipped. So what I was going to say, why would we stop foreign aid? I mean, if we... Sorry. My speakers are low because... Okay, back to what I was saying. Why would we stop foreign aid? I mean, helping Israel is... Wouldn't God like that? I mean... Never mind.
Yeah, take your time, gather your thoughts up there, write them down, and come on back. Stopping foreign aid is... I understand exactly where Sam's coming from there. And there's no doubt about it. Now, personally, I can understand a little bit of foreign aid here and there. I mean, we are a compassionate people. Somebody needs a hand up. It's not a problem. You know, you give a man a fish and you've made it dependent. Teach him to fish and you fed him for a lifetime. You know, it's that simple. But you know, I'm with him there in the foreign aid business. You know, or at least make a good list of people, and anybody that doesn't reiterate the same kind feelings towards you, just strike them right off the foreign aid. You know, the government has already been taken over to such an extent that, you know, the redistribution of wealth is taking place right before our very eyes. And I mean, the worst part about it is we enable it. You know, we sat still for all the tax increases that we've had. I mean, face it, George Bush got elected for the fact that he was giving us tax cuts. You know, and at the point in time, that was what we needed more than anything else, was to have a little bit of relief from our taxes so that we could put the money back into the system itself and make the whole system work for everybody. Obviously, the results speak for themselves, you know, the lowest unemployment in years, the highest average wage out there, more millionaires than ever before, more people owning homes than ever before. You know, despite the negative talk you've had out there about the subprime mortgages falling out, you know, there have been so many more people who could not have afforded a home before the tax cuts and before the economic reform that came place during the Bush presidency here, the Bush administration, that it's unprecedented. You know, it's the economy is gone in leaps and bounds. And why? Because, you know, people were just allowed to be that much more freer. Well, you know, let's face it, you know, the more freedom, the better is the way I look at it. It just does good for everybody overall. All right, Pillman, you got your hand back up there. Go ahead.
I just wanted to refer to the foreign aid. The foreign aid is used mainly to purchase military equipment from the United States. Basically, the money that Israel receives, the military products that military purchases has to be at least 50% made in America. And in many ways, Israel is becoming independent with their military industries. They've got large companies like Elbit, Raphael, IMI. In many cases, Israel is more than capable of producing their own planes. The Lavi project, which was canceled, it was funded by U.S. corporations at the time, but the United States felt it would be cheaper to provide them the F-16s, which Israel modified and put in their own avionics. And, of course, the M-16 rifles, which replaced the Galil assault rifles in Israel. So that's basically what the aid is used is for military aid. So in many ways, the foreign aid, it's kind of creating a welfare state, and you never want another country to become dependent on another country for its own survival, so to speak. So in many cases, ending the foreign aid is actually doing Israel a favor. They're becoming independent. They become self-reliant on their own military complex, and it helps the Israeli industries advance. Also, in many cases, you have to remember that many of the Israeli companies are also funded by American companies. You've got Boeing and Lockheed that are investing and awarding contracts to Israeli defense industries to co-develop technology for the United States military. So, essentially speaking, foreign aid is really, I mean, it really does more harm than good. Not to mention, you all remember Ariel Sharon. Who do you think paid to get those Israelis evicted from their homes in the Gaza Strip? So in many ways, you know, I would hate to hear that that money would be used to evict Israelis from their homes. So I think ending foreign aid would be the best thing we could do for Israel. It would also give them a heck of a lot more freedom to do what they need to do to get the job done.
Well, of course, thank you very much, and I agree with every word that you said. The best, you know, all the anti-Semites say, stop foreign aid to Israel, stop foreign aid to Israel, and don't realize they're doing Israel a big favor. We agree 100%, please, stop foreign aid to Israel. That's the best thing you could do for Israel. You know, giving welfare to a welfare recipient does not help that welfare recipient. Giving drugs to a drug addict does not help that drug addict. Dependence is not good for any country, and Israel doesn't need it. Israel, per capita, has more than three times the number of scientists that Japan has, and Japan is number two in the world in terms of per capita number of scientists. I mean, Israel could become a technological powerhouse if they weren't shackled by socialism and foreign aid and all these restrictions that are put on them, if Israel were truly liberated. And that would be better for all of us. That would be better for America, for Western civilization, because then Israel could act against the Muslim terrorists. So this is a disastrous situation, this foreign aid. Look at, it goes way beyond this whole discussion of Israel and the Arabs. Do you know that if you look at the loans that we give that are never repaid to the International Monetary Fund, to the World Bank, the programs we fund with the evil anti-American United Nations, all of these programs, we are literally giving out hundreds of billions of dollars. It is a huge amount of money, much more than the actual formal foreign aid appropriations that you see every year in the Congress. Much more than that. The money we give in loans that are never repaid to all these third world countries. These third world countries not only don't repay the loans, they don't even repay the interest on these loans, let alone the principal, and then we give them more loans because we say that we need to give them a new loan to repay the old loans. And it's an endless cycle, and it's a bottomless pit. We could save enormous amounts of money, and we would stop supporting and funding our enemies. One of the things we're doing with foreign aid, with the Muslims, for instance, all the foreign aid that we give to Muslim countries, tens of billions that we've been giving to Egypt, for instance, we are funding a Muslim population boom. The Muslims would be starving to death without foreign aid and without our dependence on their oil. And we wouldn't have this Muslim population boom. Right now, the Muslims are growing, in terms of population, far faster than any non-Muslim group in the world. They are not, one out of every six people in the world now is a Muslim. And if this continues at this rate, they eventually will become the majority of the world's population. There is a population boom that is going on. When the state of Israel was created in 1948, Egypt had 20 million people. Today, Egypt has 77 million people. In 1973, when Saudi Arabia first cut off all oil shipments to the United States to blackmail the United States during the 1973 Yom Kippur Middle East War. In 1973, when the oil crisis started, Saudi Arabia had 4 million people. Saudi Arabia today has 25 million people. You have Arab families, and it's very common, with 13, 14, 15 children per family. You have Arab men, sometimes who marry 3, 4, 5, 6 women, and some of them have 30, 40, 50 children each. Because of all the women that they're marrying. I mean, you have a population boom that is unbelievable, and at the same time, white Europeans and Americans have a negative population growth. So we have a tremendous demographic crisis, and that we are enabling them to reproduce and reproduce and reproduce, and that is a growing time bomb that's going to blow up in our face. And that is because of foreign aid, because of loans that are never repaid, because of UN programs that are insane, and because of our dependence on foreign oil. If we ended the dependence on foreign oil and rendered oil worthless, which we can do, and if we ended foreign aid, that they would not be able to sustain that population increase. They would have to control their population because they'd literally be starving, and that would save the world from many, many more Muslim terrorists in the future.
All true. No doubt about it. We have enabled it in such a manner. Let me ask you this, before I turn the mic over to Guy here again. Do you think that there's a faction of Muslims out there that has enough common sense to talk to the jihadists and change their minds? It's a simple question, but, you know, do you think it's at some point in time that there's a faction of them that are worthwhile? Do you think that there's anything that can be done? Do you think that they would live side by side with the rest of us in a peaceful coexistence?
I don't. I really don't. I believe that Muslims, if you are a Muslim, if you were born a Muslim and you don't believe in jihad and you don't believe in conquering the world and you don't believe in terrorism and you don't believe in violence, and there are people who are born Muslims who really don't believe that way, but they're not Muslims anymore. If you read the Quran and read the Hadith, I recommend that people read the Quran and read the Hadith. It's not pleasant to read it. They're very horrible, violent, hateful books. But I do believe people, Americans, should read it in order to know our enemy. If you read the Quran and you read the Hadith, it is completely, uncompromisingly committed to world conquest. It's called Dar al-Islam. All the world must be under the abode of Islam. All nations that are not under the abode of Islam are called Dar al-Kharb, which means under the abode of the sword. And Muhammad, the founder of Islam, commanded the Muslims to conquer the world. That's the meaning of jihad, of holy war. And Islam is completely uncompromising and makes it clear that if you don't believe in those things, you are not a Muslim anymore. The entire world must become Muslim. There is no tolerance for non-Muslims in the Islamic religion. No tolerance. Either forcible conversion or exterminating your enemies is the only solution that Islam offers in the end. Muhammad, when he took over the Arabian Peninsula, forcibly converted or exterminated every single non-Muslim, every Christian, every Jew, every pagan, every non-Muslim he forcibly converted or exterminated. And there were no exceptions. Muhammad himself personally raped Jewish women. And the Hadith, which is the so-called holy books of Islam, recount the Jewish women that he raped. He cut the heads off of all Jewish men and boys. He made a peace treaty, Rish, that he was going to give, that he was no longer, that he was the tribe, and he promised them 10 years. In 10 years of peace. And what he did it 2 years later when he was strong enough, he did that because he was too weak to defeat them. And so he lied and he signed the treaty and he tricked them. And 2 years later, he surprise attacked them. When he was much stronger, he surprise attacked them. And he exterminated all the men, all the males he exterminated, and all the women he raped and turned into slaves. And this is all recounted, and they're very proud of this in the Hadith. Look at how the Prophet fooled them, and look how clever the Prophet was. He showed them, and this is what you're supposed to do with the infidels. If an infidel puts his hand out to you, you should know, you should immediately kill him. I mean, these are the things that are written there. There is no way you can, saying you're a moderate Muslim is like saying you're a moderate Nazi. It's just impossible, and you can't be a Nazi and be moderate. This is an ideology of hatred. And so, the only answer, so what's the answer then? We have 1.5 billion people who are Muslims, what's the answer? The only answer is, if we become energy independent and we end foreign aid and we have a good foreign policy, eventually, if they didn't have the oil, Islam would wither. Islam would wither and it would no longer be a threat to us. That would be the end of the threat. The only reason Islam is suddenly such a threat For centuries, Islam hasn't been a threat to us. Why all of a sudden, since the 1970s, are they a threat? They're a threat because we're giving them trillions of dollars to pay for their oil. If we weren't dependent upon their oil, they would not be a threat to us. They don't produce anything. They don't create anything. They don't even know how to, you know, they don't even know how to drill their own oil. To this day, there is not a Saudi Arabian Muslim who knows how to drill a single barrel of oil. They have this oil for decades. It's made them the richest people in the world. And the crazy infidels, the stupid infidels, do all the drilling for them. The infidels drill the oil, discover the oil. They're the ones that change the oil into refine the oil and ship the oil. Everything. The infidels from A to Z do everything for them. And they just sit down and take all the trillions of dollars from us. If we didn't have this situation, they would not be a threat to us anymore, and Islam eventually would wither. So that is the problem. We are funding our own destruction. We are funding our own enemies. But to believe that we are going to nurture a moderate form of Islam, we can't tell them. We can't pretend that their religion doesn't say what it says. Their religion has no moderation. There's not a, you know, the word love appears over 1,000 times in the Jewish Bible. And the Christian Bible, I think, 600 or 700 times. The word love does not appear once in the entire Quran. The word love doesn't appear even once. This is a book of such hatred. And I really urge people to read it and to see what we're dealing with. Is the Islamic terrorist threat cannot be, we can't coexist with it. We have to defeat it.
Wow, well put. Made quite the argument for it right there. So you kind of think that maybe George Bush is going down the wrong road here, thinking that if these people have some measure of liberty. Because I'll be honest with you, you know, up to a point, I'm behind George Bush in this. I'm great, yeah, you know, the tactics he's using here may or may not be right. And, of course, hindsight will tell us. But it's been my contention right along here that if they're free, if they have some form of liberty, which I guess at this point in time you would have to convince them to extend that liberty to themselves. Now, let me see if I can put all I'm thinking here into words. You're really strong in court. At any rate, you know, the position I've held up to this point is that the liberty, that if they embrace our version of liberty, so to speak, where each person is sovereign. You know, I mean, even as Americans here, you know, we think of ourselves as Americans first and then members of our churches second. Do you think there's no possibility of that? I mean, I look at it this way. I trust a lot of people. There are a lot of people out there I look at as leaders. A lot of people out there that if they come up and ask me to give them a hand doing something, I'd drop whatever I was doing and help them out. But there isn't a single one of them out there that could come up to me and say, Mark, got a real problem in your neighborhood. Got a mosque down the corner there. Why don't you take that mosque out? Why don't you to strap this bomb on yourself, go down there to go to pray with them. Do us all a favor. Now, it's going to kill you in the process, but just think all the good you're going to leave behind by blowing them all up. Now, I don't know. I don't care who it is. You know, if it was my parish priest, if it was the Pope himself came up to me and asked me to do this, right after I laughed at him, I'm going to tell him where he sticked the whole idea. And I know that I would do this because, you know, a couple different reasons. A, I'm free. No matter how bad things get in life, suicide is not one of them. You know, there will always be some opportunity for me to make it. You know, I am not going to sacrifice myself so that my family can get $25,000. I'm not going to sacrifice myself for anybody's idea that the world will be better because, you know, we'll be rid of a certain people. So I think that, you know, the ideology of liberty that I have embraced is going to keep me from performing any kind of a suicide bombing or any attacks on anybody else whatsoever. Because I'm placing my own self-interest first here. My interest, my family. and whatnot. So you think there's like no hope for them, even if they were to embrace liberty in a democratic society, I guess is basically the question I'm asking.
I really believe there is no hope. I think that when George Bush, for instance, insisted that Israel allow free elections in Judea, Samaria, and the Gaza district, Hamas won the elections overwhelmingly. All of the groups running were terrorist organizations. All of their leaders are terrorists. All of their leaders are terrorists who say that America should be destroyed. And they always vote. They always vote for the most militant extreme terrorists because the more militant, the more extreme, the more fanatic you are, that's what they like the best. And so Hamas won overwhelmingly, which shocked the Bush administration and shocked the Israeli government. We weren't shocked. We knew all along that was going to happen. We predicted predicted that was going to happen. People speak about the evil dictator of Iran, Ahmadinejad, but forget that he was democratically elected in Iran. And in Iraq, Bush introduced free elections in Iraq. We got rid of Saddam Hussein. We introduced free elections in Iraq. What do we have? We have an Iraqi government now that says that they support Iran, that they think that Iran has a right to develop nuclear bombs and to have their nuclear program, and they're supporting Iran, and they say they would like to have a similar type of government that you have in Iran. They'd like to have that now in Iraq, which is what we predicted exactly, the exact thing that we predicted would happen when George Bush went to war in Iraq. These, you know, the founding fathers who were really, they are the model for us, the founding fathers. They were such magnificent great men, and let us never forget what the founding fathers did. Because of their morals, because of their Judeo-Christian principles, because of their commitment to morals and to the Bible, because of that, they turned 13 underpopulated, puny, agricultural, backwater colonies that no one in the world even paid attention to, that people thought these 13 colonies could never even survive, 13 divided colonies with infighting and problems and economic problems. And the United States was a joke when it was first created. That nation was eventually transformed into the most powerful, the greatest, the most magnificent nation in human history. And the reason that happened was because we had founding fathers and morals and principles and family life that made us a great nation and made us a great people. And but one of the things the founding fathers said that we should remember when it comes to Islam, the founding fathers warned that the liberties they're giving us are only good when it's for civilized people, for civilized people, it will only be good. When you deal with people that vote for an Ahmadinejad or vote in Hamas, you're not dealing with civilized people. And let's never forget that giving people the right to vote and giving people freedom is no guarantee that they will not do the wrong thing. Hitler was democratically elected. Let's never forget that. Hitler was overwhelmingly supported in Germany and was democratically elected. So we have to always remember who we're dealing with. And when it comes to the Muslims, they really learn from the time they are born, they learn to hate non-Muslims. The Quran teaches them that all non-Muslims are pigs and devils and dogs, that women should be slaves and treated worse than cattle, that it's okay to rape non-Muslim women, that most women, even most Muslim women, go to hell because they're always complaining. I wonder why Muslim women would complain. What do they have to complain about? That's what the Quran and the Hadith teach us. I mean, this is a horrific ideology of hatred and darkness and evil. And one of the differences we have with our generation, in past generations, we had Americans who were moral, with good family life and good moral background, who understood when we faced evil, whether it was communism or Nazism, who understood that we have a confrontation here with evil and we must win. We don't have that anymore. Now we have moral equivalence, and we have people that are saying we have to coexist with the evil, and that is a very, very big mistake. A very, very big mistake. We have a tremendous challenge on our hands, and we have to remember we've never faced a religious enemy before. Nazism, communism, and all of our enemies in the past were ideologies. Now we're facing an enemy that is based upon religion, and that's a very uncomfortable situation for Americans, because America was built upon the premise of religious liberty and pluralism and tolerating other religious beliefs. And it's beautiful that we have that, and it's a good thing and a beautiful thing that we have religious pluralism and we tolerate other people's beliefs and we respect each other's religious beliefs. That's a wonderful, beautiful part of America, and it's one of the things that made America so great. But we have to understand that this is a different situation now. There's a whole different ballgame now. With Islam, we've got a whole different situation. We have an ideology committed to our destruction based upon religion. And so we shouldn't let our desire to respect other people's religions and religious liberty and religious freedom and religious pluralism, we shouldn't let that get in the way of understanding that there are people who will exploit that to destroy us. And that is what I believe that Islam represents, and that is something that we have to wake the American people. We have to wake up the American people and have to wake them up fast, because we're facing some very terrible perils, in my view.
Wow. I think you're right. I think you're hitting the nail right on the head there. And I'm definitely putting an exclamation point on a few things that have been just underscored and forgotten. No doubt about it. Well, thank you very much. Listen, I'm not going to cut you off here, but for a couple of minutes. We are at the top of the hour, however, actually running a couple of minutes later, and it is time for the sponsors of the two different networks to sell some of their wares out there. After all, this is a capitalist venture of sorts. And I'm going to flip it over. Willie, the mic is yours. And we will be right back. Folks, you are listening to the Politics Cafe, www.herncode.com and the ASI Radio Network. We'll be right back, folks.
Meeting new friends online can be hard to do at times. Chatting to complete strangers, showing cams with each other, and even sharing music. Can all this be done safely? No spyware, viruses attached to my computer. Absolutely. PalTalk lets you chat, video cam, share music with family and friends, including free chat rooms where you can talk to each other about any topic that is on your mind. There is a category for everyone. Which one are you in? Play it on PalTalk today. www.paltalk.com. www.paltalk.com.
In a time where good and evil have become completely distorted, one bright ray of light shines through. Politics Lobby 4. A modern-day battle of epic proportions. One light, many voices. Frontline with Kit Burke. The Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher. And the Extreme Forum with Randy Wright. Good versus evil. Light against dark. And fact versus fiction. Stay informed, arm yourself, and prepare for the battle. www.politicslobby4.com. Now is the time.
ASI. Audio. Are you ready? Video. Interactive. And you can catch it all. That's right, at ASI.
Ladies and gentlemen, do you enjoy spending time with everyone's favorite self-appointed activist judge? If so, you'll want to visit www.politicslobby4.com. That's www.politicslobby4.com. Once there, if my show is on the air, you'll be able to click on a link and be brought directly into the chat room from which the show is being hosted. You'll have access to streaming video and polls via the Politics Lobby site, and you'll have a chance to interact with your favorite activist judge via text. So do your jury duty and visit www.politicslobby4.com and tell them Chief Justice Randy Wright sent you.
You're listening to the Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher. Coming to you from Politics Lobby 4, join us at www.politicslobby4.com. That's www.politicslobby4.com. Or join us live in the Social Issues and Politics section at PalTalk.com. We'd love to see you there.
Listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com and the ASI Radio Network. Broadcast from the Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders voice room at PalTalk. All are welcome to join us. Big room, lots of seats in here. And if you've got something you'd like to ask, raise your hand. All right, my friend, Guy Wop, and you had your hand up before there. You were a little confused, but I think you've got it together. And I'm sorry I made you wait so long, but the mic is all yours, my friend.
Okay, thank you. And, yeah, I think I've got it all together now. And, well, so you guys are saying that we should stop foreign aid so the Muslims will starve, so we can go to war with them and pretty much kill them all. That's pretty much all y'all are saying. That's all I'm getting, really. And if you want to... Excuse me for a minute, I'll be back.
All right, Yakov, you got to fix your mic up there. There was no sound coming out. I just want to let you know there. You had keyed up and you missed it altogether. No, I think you missed what was happening there. You know, it wasn't so much to cut off the foreign aid so that they would go to war with us. It's cutting off the foreign aid so that they wouldn't be able to arm themselves to go to war with us. You know, I think the biggest problem that we've been having throughout the last 50 years is somehow or another believing that we could live a peaceful coexistence with someone who is committed to our destruction. You know, up until this point in time, they've only been able to eye us from afar, look at the riches that we've managed to put together for ourselves, especially the riches that we have built, the agriculture that we have built, the industry that we have built, and as collectivist societies have always done in the past, you know, they play to the bottom. They basically bring out the worst in people, stifle the best, stifle innovation. Basically, I've told every inventor since the beginning of time that, you know, this is a collectivist society. If you make an invention, it ain't for your good. It's for the good of everyone else. And you, my friend, will benefit no more than anyone else from it. You know, obviously not the way to go. If you're going to have an invention, make it worthwhile for someone, well, it's going to have to be good for a couple million bucks, or why would he bother? You know, if you knew that everything you were ever going to invent was going to be stolen from you, it was not going to get you anywhere in life, where is your incentive to become an inventor? You know, if everything you were ever going to do was going to be taken from you, where is your incentive to do anything? You know, this is, and you know, especially if you know full well that it's being taken from you and given to someone who did not go through the steps that you took, to produce whatever it was that you've come up with, you know, your ideas, your goods, your services, what have you. So this is, you know, obviously the big pullbacks of any collectivist society, and modern Islam being just exactly that. You know, the only difference being in the past, you know, that all they could do is look at us from afar and do absolutely nothing. You know, call us the decadent, call us the sinners. You know, convince their underlings that they aren't poor because we've been keeping you impression in oppressive state and or in a state of oppression for the last 50 years, 2,000 years, what have you. You know, you're poor because those rich people over there are keeping you poor. You know, they have always looked to the outside. Any collectivist leader has always looked to the outside and placed the blames of his internal problems squarely on the shoulders of other people that are outside of his control. You know, the Nazis looked at the rest of Europe and said, look, it's all their fault that we're poor and they don't have anything. So we got to march on Czechoslovakia. We got to march on Poland. We got to march on France. This is what they did. The Russians the same way. You know, they weren't satisfied with just Russia. They had to grab up every state around there and form a Soviet Union. And obviously, as the Soviet Union was heading down the tubes, they tried to expand even further. Look at, you know, witness what they tried in Afghanistan, other places around the world. What has it gotten them? This has always, but always been the collectivist ideology. Or one result of it is that they had to expand their borders in order to make it. It's exactly what they're looking at right now. But they will never, ever, ever look at their own internal problems. They will never look at their own tyranny. They will never look at their own despotism as being the cause of all their own problems. They're always going to point it elsewhere. And it's people who gain power in collectivist societies that have always been, you know, motivated by just that. Gaining power, period. That's all they want. It's all Hillary wants. Stop and think about it. Hillary's got a million things that she wants to address out there. And she has addressed these. And what's her answer for it all? We can get together and solve those problems. Well, I'm going to tell you something, bud. We're not going to get together voluntarily under her program. But, you know, I still can't understand how she expects to form a health care system and get around the 13th Amendment. I just don't see how she's going to be able to do it. All right. Mr. Trumpeldorf, you are up next. The microphone is all yours.
Hello, everyone. Shalom Chaim. Some people believe that America was hit on 9/11 because of our support for Israel. Can you put this notion to rest? Thank you.
Yes, yes. Thank you for the very important question, Trumpeldor. And of course, it's absurd. There's no question. If you read the Quran says that all non-Muslims have to be exterminated. America is the most powerful and the mightiest non-Muslim nation in the world. America is the number one challenge to the Muslims. So of course they're going to want to destroy America. When the Muslims promised to exterminate all non-Muslim infidels, was that because of Israel? When Muhammad wrote what he wrote, was it because of Israel or because of Israel's policies? It's absurd. I mean, of course it's absurd. America was certainly not hit because of Israel, and I think most people... I do think most Americans do understand that. I think most Americans understand that Muslims hate our guts. They hate us. They believe that they're right and that we're wrong. And it's okay. And by the way, I wouldn't mind if they believe their religion is right and the religion of the Christians and Jews is wrong. Okay, listen, that... I don't mind differences of opinion, but when they say we're right and you're wrong and we must exterminate you, that is a very serious problem, especially when they have trillions of petrodollars that enables them to build nuclear weapons to carry out their lunatic agenda. That's a very serious problem. But if Israel didn't exist, does anybody really doubt that Iran and all these other countries would still be committed to destroying the United States? Does anyone think that American soldiers are being murdered now by Muslim terrorists in Iraq because of the state of Israel? Does anyone really think that Ahmadinejad had a conference where he said he dreams of a world where the United States is wiped off the face of the earth, and the name of the conference was World Without America? Does anyone think that there wouldn't be conferences like that if Israel didn't exist? Does anyone think the Iranians didn't take American diplomats hostage and humiliate and torture them for 444 days when Jimmy Carter was president? Does anyone think that they did that because of Israel? I mean, of course, it's completely ridiculous, and avoiding reality is the most dangerous thing we can do when we're facing a war for our survival.
Well put. Very well put. Let me ask you a question. I have got a ticket next week to go and see Salman Rushdie, author of The Satanic Verses. Anything in particular I should note from him? Are you familiar with him? And is there any questions you think that I should hit him with?
I wouldn't know what to ask him, but he did actually quote from some of the things that Muhammad said, because the Satanic Verses is something that Muhammad actually, it's part of the Islamic belief that the Muslims want to hide, where Muhammad said that he was possessed by the devil. Muhammad actually said Satanic Verses is a part of Islamic belief, where Muhammad said that there was a point, and it's in the hadith, where he was possessed by the devil. Where he was possessed by demons, and that's why he came up with certain things, certain ideas that he came up with, and it actually was, this actually has been written. So Salman Rushdie, just all he did is expose the truth and mention the truth about this, and of course they put a price on his head for that. So I think it's actually important that he's exposing that particular aspect of what Islam stands for, because I think a lot of people today would say that. When Muhammad said that he was possessed by the devil at one point, I think a lot of people would say that it's probably safe to say that he was possessed by the devil throughout the time that he was preaching Islam.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay, well, a little food for thought there. I kind of can't wait. I have a ticket to see him. He's appearing at the local high school here next week, and dying to hear everything the man has to say, especially, you know, wake him up here in the liberal state of Massachusetts. You know, people in complete total denial about everything that's going on in the world. It's you know, basically the liberals up here have taken Ron Paul's side of things. You know, they're only PO'd because we've been over there meddling in their affairs. Yeah, right. You know, which really amazes me, because if there's any liberal, or if there's any affairs that we were meddling in that led to 9/11, I think the most often cited one is where Conoco was basically trying to establish a pipeline from the Caspian Sea down into the Gulf, and run it through the middle of Afghanistan. And they actually approached the Taliban and tried to get licensing agreements and work out some kind of negotiations for them. And it never worked out, but they will never admit that the person that they sent over there to head those negotiations was Madeleine Albright, who failed miserably in the whole deal. So if there's any talk about us meddling in their affairs, I think that's about the only one you could put to. But, I mean, have we ever meddled in their affairs? We go over there and we meet with them and we try to do business. I know it's all been a strictly business kind of thing, which is, it's, you got to admit, that's one thing Americans have been totally naive about. You know, people look at us conservatives and us right-wingers and turn around and tell us we're bigoted, we're biased, we're prejudiced, you know, we hate this, we hate Jews, we hate gays, we hate blah, blah, blah. You know, and the fact of the matter is, you know, obviously they don't really know us. Because if one of our faults out there has ever been, it's the fact that we'll do business with anybody. You know, if we're in a business for selling a product and a service, and someone approaches us to make that product or service, the only thing we worry about is whether or not they can afford it. Period. Stop. Beyond that, it doesn't matter what color they are, what God they pray to, who their sexual partners are. None of that matters. You know, I sold cars for years, and I did not care about anything on the other side, about that person sitting on the other side of my desk, other than, A, do they want this product that I have to sell, and B, are they willing to pay for it? And as far as I'm concerned, if they bought it and they paid for it, I made a friend and I made some money. You know, and that's the way conservatives have always been. We have always held ourselves up to that standard. You know what I mean? And they walk away, you know, friends. You know, I the small town that I live in here, very ethnically diverse. I got to admit, some of my best friends around here are the Hindus. The guys are tons of fun. They own a lot of businesses around here. And they're great to do business with. They're easy. And a lot of fun. I mean, you know, they're all baseball fans. They're all football fans. They're all, you know, they're good Americans is the way I look at it. And it's, you know, we overlook everything and everybody other than the fact that, you know, A, are you a productive human being? And B, do you want to engage in trade? You know, beyond that, we don't care about anything else. It might be even to our detriment. All right, Guy, you got your hand up there again. Have we answered your question?
Okay, yeah, see, entirely.
All right, Guy. Get it back together again. You are being broadcast to about 80,000 people around the world right now. All right, my friend from Australia. My goodness, it's got to be early in the morning over your way. Deb, why don't you step up to the mic? We are on the air. You're on the Politics Cafe, broadcast around the world. And we have Chaim Ben Pisak, head of the JTF here. Have you got something you'd like to ask him? Or something you want to say? You know, it's always good to see you, Deb. Mic is yours.
Well, I would just like to say how great it is to be able to hear you, JTF, and for you to be able to share your knowledge and wisdom with the room. I think that's just wonderful. Thanks, too, to BB for organizing this, and Lily, the room, and things like that. It's a wonderful thing to have a show such as this available to people all around the world, like 10,000 miles away. There you go. One thing that I'd like to add is that you're probably well aware that in some respects Australians are not perhaps as welcoming of the Islamic faith in general as it would seem the American people are. That may well be that may well be to our detriment. I don't know. I tend to not think so, and I'll tell you why. Comments earlier about, you know, what does make a good Australian? What does make a good American? And I would suggest that it's those people who are like-minded. Of your values, your ideals, your social mores. I would agree it is completely irrelevant a person's race, color, or creed. But and certainly, you know, your country, the USA, is a melting pot of persons from around the world, as is mine. And it's just that particular notion of a melting pot that every now and again, you know, it gets to me. And I think to myself, should it really be that we're a melting pot? Because when you think about it, you have a particular, I mean, if you want to take the analogy right there, a melting pot is where you have something to start off with, and hypothetically that's the American nation, the American people, the American way of life. And then you put in a whole lot of other things, and you melt them all together. Do you end up with the same at the end? The answer would invariably be no. You know, you put baked beans and sausages or whatever. I know this may sound a little out there to people, but what I'm getting to is that when you have people who are coming to your country, coming into your country as immigrants, then I think that the people of the nation need to be able to, and have every right to be able to say to them, hey, listen, you're very welcome here, but understand, don't come here and want to change us to your ways. If what you want is your ways from where you came from, then, you know, you might like to consider to stay there. If you would like us to help you, by some stretch of the imagination, to have a life like ours, oh, hello, we'd be doing like we're in Iraq, but, oh, what's up with that? Do you see the point that I'm making? The point that I'm trying to get across is that that's how we feel to, I think, somewhat of a greater extent than, well, maybe that's done, maybe we don't. I believe the average American thinks that way as well. The difference is, I believe, probably the notion of political correctness. That seems to be way more full in swing in the USA than it is here. At least now, we're probably only a few years behind you with regards to that. But right at this point in time, we do exercise our right as Australians and our government's right, elected by the people, for the people, to say to people coming into this country, hey, here are the rules. Are you going to stick by them? This is what we expect of you. We'll give you what you want, a wonderful life, a freedom that you won't believe, assistance to do what you want to do and reach your every potential and have you know, your every dream realized. But hey, you've got to play the game the way we need you to play the game. And what's more is, if you don't play the game this way, these are the end results, that you will be asked to leave, that you will be stopped during your activity. And that's what we've done. And it seems to be, at least at this point in time, working. I'm not suggesting that we do it right and you don't do it right. I'm just putting a different perspective on things. And I would humbly suggest that one of the greatest problems that I see in my country is a media that is holding its listeners to ransom. When you have a media that can say anything it wants, when it wants, however often it wants, without any regulation whatsoever, you know, you're looking at a situation of people like Michael Moore being able to say whatever he wants around the world about your country. Barefaced, black, and blatant lies about your nation and its situation. Whatever happened to him, except that he was patted on the back by a significant number of people and made inordinately wealthy for his job. So we need to be addressing this. Freedom of speech is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing. You know, God bless the USA for what it stands for and what it does around the world to ensure that people have freedom of speech. But when you take that right and turn it into something that you use against your nation, that's sedition. I don't care what anybody says. I think we need to be looking seriously at members of the media being borderline seditionists in certain countries. Yours included and mine to some extent as well. I really do believe that that's where the problem perhaps isn't originating, but is certainly being perpetuated. Anyway, I've taken up people's time. That's just my opinion. Take what you want, leave the rest. I just want to say thanks again, and God bless the USA. God bless Mr. Bush. He's a good man doing the toughest job in the world, I believe, or one thereof, right after mine, being a mother. I'm only kidding, but I certainly hope that your right-wing conservative people get themselves back in government, and please keep my country in your prayers for November the 24th, which is when we go to the polls again. Hopefully, my boy John Howard will be re-elected. He's done great things for this country. I hope that continues. Thanks, guys. Thanks again, BB and TDF, TFG, TGF. Okay. That nice man. There you go.
All right, thanks, Deb. Good to hear from you. You know, believe it or not, Deb, it actually written into most of the state constitutions is some clause or another that says, yes, you have the freedom of speech, but you are also responsible for it. Pennsylvania's is the first one that comes to mind. Although I gotta admit, I don't remember anything written into Massachusetts about it. And years ago, people would get sued for this in a big, big way. And why it doesn't happen more and more today, I don't know. You know, it's a lot of it has to do with, like Kayan was saying there before, moral relativism. You know, we have reached a point in this country where fully 20% of the country out there believes that truth is whatever most people agree on. You know, having nothing to do with, the real meaning of truth, the real philosophy behind truth. But it simply can dissolve whatever most people believe must be the truth. You know, it happens that way. I think it's sad. But I think that, you know, the structures that were set forth by our founding fathers, especially some of the ones that worked in the states and wrote into their state constitutions, just kind of been cast by the wayside. You know, things like slander, libel, and whatnot. You know, you used to regularly see lawsuits and people accusing each other of this, but you don't anymore. You know, and it's all because, you know, the battle, I don't know if the battle's too much for them or what it is, really. Or whether, you know, these people who speak this stuff are above it. But even in the end, I mean, you know, it's even when they are nailed, it's always, you know, it's funny, but the slander is always on front page, and the corrections are always in the back of the sports section. You know, it's still probably will always end up being that way. You know, the first case that comes to mind with me is the hoax of the Lewinsky Institute. Folks out there will remember, and I don't remember the name of the author, but an article came out in the New York Times, and it was purported that there was a place called the Lewinsky Institute up in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And they had studied various things that were said by President Bush and various other things that were said by the nominee of the Democratic Party, Al Gore, during all of the debates and in some of the speeches going up to that. And they deduced from what each of these men said what their IQ was. And they had Al Gore ratcheted it up somewhere in the low 130s, but they had Bush down around 78. And this ran as an article in the New York Times, and the libs just sucked it right up. It was heard all over. We heard it in chat rooms. We heard it in the newspapers, blah, 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 blah. And then lo and behold, oh, Christ, it was almost 8 months after the fact. The author of said article was basically shown to be a bold-faced liar. There was no Lewinsky Institute. There was, people went searching through Scranton looking for it, could never find it. There was no listing for it anywhere. All to find out the entire article was nothing but a hoax. And but the damage was done. Now, the guy that wrote the article was fired from the New York Times for writing the article, and that was the end of it. You know, like I said, there was a little bit of an ad that sat in the back, and bang, gone, buried. But you still, believe it or not, I will still get emails from liberals out there now showing me, what do you think about this? And it's kind of like, you know, hey, what's the matter with you? You know, don't you read the papers? Don't you listen to the news? Do you do any research on your own? And, of course, I've always got to send off an article to them that shows where this was all put to rest and where that person was actually fired. And the New York Times duly reported that they fired the guy. You know, buried somewhere back in the fashion section or something like that, you know, where nobody was ever going to see it. So it's, you know, the manipulation that goes on by the press is just is unheralded. You know, thank God that there is, you know, a right-wing movement in this country that has found the airwaves and has found the internet and moved it along here. You know, I'm still waiting to see who's going to be the right-wing Howard Dean as far as raising money on the internet. You know, Howard Dean raised $95 million for his causes on the internet. So far, in other words, I have not seen anybody come out and do the same thing on the right wing here. Now, granted, Howard Dean, once he got out in the public, you know, proved just exactly what an idiot he was and was soundly denounced even by his own party. But, I mean, hey, you know, you've got the same thing happening with Hillary right now. You got the Arianna Huffington crew that can't stand her, and they're hard left-wing. Other hard left-wingers out there who are poo-pooing her total position on the war, they all know full well that she is not going to pull out of Iraq right away and won't even commit to having pulled out of Iraq by the end of her first term or even a second term, you know, should she manage to get elected to a second one. So she's got a lot of people over there PO'd. But still, what do you hear from the press? She's number one in the polls. You know, she is running ahead. Personally, I don't think she has any competition on her side of the bar there. I think Barack Obama's just a joke, I'll be honest with you. I don't think he stands a snowball's chance in hell. Edwards is just, he's an even funnier joke. You know, so maybe they could say, yeah, she's the one that they're going to nominate because she's the only one they got with any credibility. You know, although, you know, her experience and whatnot, well, let's face it, she's a communist. You know, I make no bones about it. I've been calling a woman a communist right along here, and I will continue to do so. But it's, you know, the press will hold her right up there and say, yep, she be the one. She's the one we've got picked, you know. And of course, tonight, well, what do we hear tonight? I don't know if I got it in my stack of stuff over here. But the political market, at any rate, is what's being touted today. And whoever the political market is picking Hillary and Giuliani. As if the political market had actual domination over the whole entire electoral process in the United States of America. But hey, you know where it does have domination at? Is in the mainstream media. All right, now I did not contain an article on it. I must have figured it was just too funny to laugh at, or I would actually read it to you. But that's enough of that. At any rate, Kaim, have you got any closing comments that you would like to make here? We got a little bit of time left in the show. And I got to admit, I want to thank you very much for coming on tonight. Your remarks have been just hitting right on nails, getting hit squarely on the head, and you're driving them home. You know, I think you are there. I think you know exactly what is going on here. And I really like your stance with the way you're taking it on Israel. I firmly believe the same thing about Israel. You know, I got to admit that Jewish people as a whole have always been very successful in a lot of things they've done. And I firmly believe it's because they're very disciplined with the morals and the mores that they hold with each other. You know, I'm going to admit that some of the most successful jobs that I have ever worked at, I had Jewish bosses to work for. And I'll use a word that you might even understand that I hopefully won't break G. It's a kikofonitz. And I heard a lot of them call each other just that. But it was like, you know, these guys were very tough to work for. But in the end, and I mean, they would, you know, they'd hump on you, you know, make you do your job. But in the end, man, they always paid me the best. And they always made me feel the best about myself when I accomplished doing whatever it was I set out to do. You know, it was like, you know, while you're in the learning process and while they're training you to do what it is that you must do, you know, a lot of times you say, I'm going to kill this guy. You know, what's the matter with him? He's too tough on me, blah, 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 blah. But if you exercise the same discipline that they use and you use your head and you work at it, and, you know, you always end up finding the success. And the success usually rewards you beyond what you thought you were going to come up with. You know, I'll be honest with you, my biggest one has to be with when I was a car salesman. You know, I started out, you know, doing so-so, making out okay, making a living. But after a while, they hired on a good Jewish car sales manager. And guy got to be one of my best friends. He still is right today. We play a lot of golf together. We have a lot of fun. But he broke me. He busted my hump, you know, so I don't break G here and say what I really wanted to say. But made it worth my while. I never made so much money. I never made so many friends. I never made so many good repeat return customers. People that will come back and buy more cars from me. And it was all strictly due to that man's training. You know, the guy was younger than I am. Totally Hebrew. Well, not totally Hebrew. His favorite food was pork chops, but we'll leave that one alone. But you understand what I'm talking about here. You know, the fact that the discipline overrides all of it. And I think that that's one of the reasons that, you know, a lot of people will take an anti-Semitic view. You know, people look at it and they're tired of, or they're too lazy to engage in the discipline necessary. You know, it amazes me that they will turn around and say that, you know, the same discipline is necessary to make it in their system. But they're always asking you to make sacrifices and blah, 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 blah. And if you sit down and you look at a lot of them saying, well, you know, we really need to get back to nature and we really need to do for each other and we really need to say, hey, you know, there is already a society out there that works that way. You know, you don't want market commercialism. You don't want capitalism. You don't want any of this. You want everybody to work together. You want everybody to get along with each other. Well, it sounds to me like you want to move to Lancaster, Pennsylvania and join the Amish. Well, let's see you get along with them. Now, there's a disciplined people. Them people get up in the morning and they go to work. And they go to work until the time is done. You know, until the sun goes down. And then they go in, they eat, and they go to sleep. And that's it. That's life for them. But, hey, very successful life. Ever see a skinny Amish woman? You never will either, baby. You never will. They're all nice, plump, happy, and healthy with a rosy tinge to their cheeks. And because they eat well. They're well taken care of. They're healthy. But, hey, which liberal out there that you know could live their lifestyle? Which one of them do you know that could actually drag it out of bed in the morning before the sun came up and started working the farm? But no, you know, they would all have us do that for them while they are in charge. While they sit up at the top and pull the levers and push the buttons that directs us where to go, you know, they will help us build the better life. Yeah, right. Sorry. Yeah, exactly there, Mr. Dan Ben Noah. Conservative work and liberals work the system. Well, don't forget where my stance is on this. Should the liberals win in the end of next November of 2008? Save your money up between now and then. Don't forget we are the ones that enable these liberals to do what it is they're able to do by giving them our tax money. And I say that if they win in the first week of November of 2008, that the rest of us just take the rest of that month off and see what they can do with nothing. To see how well they make out. We will have plenty of money. We will sit back. We will pay all of our bills. We will celebrate a very sumptuous Thanksgiving. We will eat, drink, and be merry through the whole month, and they can just go and pound sand as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's just, I've about had it with them. You know, as people have earned in here over the last few weeks, my tolerance for liberals has dropped to zero. I will no longer entertain anything by them. But Kaya, very, very good to hear from you tonight. I'd like to know if you got any closing comments that you would like to make. Please step up to the mic and help yourself.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I really want to thank you, Mark. You do a fantastic program, and I was so happy to be able to speak to the wonderful people you have here. Just fantastic people. We have to get organized. And when I say get organized, we have to build a mass movement. All of us have to work together because our very survival is at stake and all the things that we care about are at stake. Mark, you were mentioning the news media and how the news media, which we call the Bolshevik news media, how the Bolshevik news media in this country distorts everything. We never get the truth. We never get the true picture of what's going on. They just don't report the truth. They distort everything. And so what we have to do is build an alternative media and alternative institutions and genuine right-wing political institutions. It's the only way we're going to survive. And that's what we aspire to do in the Jewish Task Force. The Jewish Task Force, JTF, is an organization that was formed by Jews, so it has the name Jewish in it. But actually, the vast majority of our members are not Jewish, so everybody is welcome to join us. Everybody who cares about the future of this magnificent country that the Founding Fathers created for us and that God created. Anyone who cares about the future of the country, now is the time to get involved. If we get involved and we decide to do what has to be done, I have no doubt that we can turn the tide. I have no doubt that we can save this country. The vast majority of the American people are worried about the fact that our borders are wide open, about the fact that we're losing our country, about the fact that multinational corporations are doing things that are against the interest of the American people when they invite tens of millions of illegal aliens into this country, about the fact that hundreds of billions of American dollars are going overseas to our enemies, about the fact that we are slavishly addicted to foreign oil and are funding Muslim terrorist nations that are committed to our extermination, about the fact that we're losing English as our language, about the fact that the Bible has been outlawed in school, that we have separation of church and state, but not separation of mosque and state. Muslims are allowed to pray in schools. Muslims, I could tell you, in New York City schools, if a Jewish or a Christian child tried to say a prayer, there would be an uproar, there'd be a scandal, but Muslim students are allowed to have in school auditoriums prayers on Ramadan and are praying five times a day on school property, on school time with taxpayer dollars. That's okay. So we have a country that has gone insane. And the reason it's gone insane is because the same moral majority, the same people out there are not acting, are not doing what has to be done. We have let people who are immoral, people who are not loyal to this country, take over and destroy the moral foundation and the moral fabric of our country. And it really does endanger our very survival. The consequences will be horrific unless we wake up and become involved now. I invite all of the wonderful people that I was so happy to meet here. I invite all of them to join us. It's JTF, Jewish Task Force, JTF.org. That's all you have to remember is JTF.org. And if you want to go to the forum is JTF.org/E. Or if you just want to go to JTF.org and click on the forum, you can always get to the forum from our main webpage. Please join with us and let's get involved together in trying to turn the tide and trying to save this country. Next year, we must defeat Hillary, Sodom, Clinton. We must save our country from this catastrophe. And in the long term, we have to create a situation where finally, we have a president. Isn't it time we had senators and we had congressmen and we had a news media and we had a president who fights for us instead of against us and who fight for us and fight for the things we care about? Isn't it time we had someone speaking for us for a change? Isn't that what the founding fathers wanted for us? Isn't that why they gave us liberty? They gave us liberty so that we could use this liberty to make this a better world, to make this a moral world, to make this a godly world, to make this a world based upon the foundations and the principles that turned the United States of America into the greatest nation in history. And that can only happen if we are determined to do what has to be done to change history and to make a difference. We can do that together. If we want to do that together, we can. They have not taken away that right. They have not taken away yet that right to organize and to speak and to persuade our fellow citizens that this country is worth fighting for. America is worth saving. America is worth fighting for. The things that people gave their lives for, millions of Americans gave their lives so that we could live in this wonderful country. And they did it without, and they had no doubt that it was worth it. America is worth saving and is worth fighting for. And if you believe that, and if you believe that we can save this country, and we can still turn the tide, and we can still make a difference, and we can still change history, then join with us. Together, we're going to make a difference, and together, God willing, we will make this a better world. And that will give true meaning to our lives. I mean, you know, people always wonder what their purpose in life is, because God gave every one of us. God gave every one of us a specific mission and a specific purpose in life. Every single one of us has a purpose in life, has a reason for being in this world. And the main reason we're in this world, in my view, is to make this a better world for our families, for our loved ones, and for our communities, and for our country, and for the people that we care about and love. That's why we're in this world, to make this a better world and live an idealistic life. Yes, idealism. There's nothing wrong with being idealistic. I believe that the idealists, the patriots, the lovers of truth and justice are the true realists in this world. And so if there are people who are committed to that ideal and who are committed to saving this country, again, we invite you, see what we're all about, join with us, and together we can change history. JTF.org. And Mark, again, I really want to thank you, and I want to thank all the wonderful people you have here. It's really been a pleasure. God bless you.
Chaim, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on board. Sir, you're a great American. I want everybody out there to take note of one thing. You just sat right there and said all this good stuff, and there wasn't a big thing about asking any of us here to join the Jewish religion. Not once. Did he try to persuade anybody at all? No, but he did ask us to do one thing, and that is be Americans. Be the good Americans that he knows that we can be. And he's absolutely right, folks. You know, there is nothing wrong with us getting together. It has been our biggest failure so far, you know, and it's a tough part because, let's face it, we are individualists. You know, we are the kind of people who go out there and we only do business and do trade and engage in things with people that we like, and everybody else we just shun, we just don't do it. As a rule, we do not get together and do the big group thing. We know what a bore it is. We know that, for the most part, committees can't ever get anything done. committees don't do anything but reach compromises. We don't like to compromise. We like to live our lives by our standards. But the fact of the matter is we are being outdone by people who are out there who, despite the illegitimacy of what it is that they're doing, you know, despite the horror that they are going to perpetuate, despite the tyranny that is going to result from everything that they do, are doing it simply by getting one thing right, and that's getting together. You know, and this is where we have got to, you know, overlook a little bit of the differences between each other and understand that America is greater than all of us. And America really is what we need to get together for. You know, I have often said, look, you know, the greater good, it's something that has to be taken on faith. Well, America is something that we have taken on faith, but it's a faith that has proven true. For 200 years, folks, we are not the most prosperous country in the world for no reason. We don't have the greatest freedoms in the world for no reason. It's because people held these ideas to be self-evident. And it's because the self-evidency of them has made us willing to fight for them, to keep them alive, to understand that, yeah, well, if it takes a little bit of sacrifice, yeah, but in the end, you know, nobody's going to sacrifice anything to anybody. We're going to live in a world where people trade freely, where the only relationships we have with other people are those we enter into by mutual agreement to mutual profit. There's nothing wrong with the word profit out there, folks. You get up and you decide to do something for somebody else and you're expecting something in return. There's nothing wrong with that. Who are your best friends? Why, the ones that return the favors that you give to them. You know, who are the ones that consider you to be the best friend? Why, the ones that you've returned favors to that have given favors to you. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a system of trade, value for value. It has worked for all of us. And it has worked really good for the last 200 years here. But it is being usurped. People are taking our goodwill out there and starting to demand our goodwill. They're starting to make the demands that we have to make sacrifices for those, you know, that they deem to be, unable to perform what we can perform. You know, they call us the fortunate ones, the lucky ones. You know, there's nothing fortunate about going out and working for something. Okay, it's called a just reward. You go out and you work and you earn for something, you've earned it. There's nothing fortunate about that. Well, maybe you did something a little more, and maybe you got a little more out of it, or you figured out a way to help more people, and you got a little more out of it. But that's the beauty of it. That's what the incentive behind freedom is all about. The more people that you can make happy, the richer you can become. You know, it's like I've said a million times. I had a very famous sales manager once said to me, Mark, he says, look, you can go out there and make yourself crazy. He says, go and beat your brains against the wall trying to find that billionaire that's going to buy something off of you for $500 million and give you that $1 million commission. You just go out and find a million people, get a dollar out of each one. You know, in the end, which way you think is going to get you the faster $1 million? Which one's going to be more fun? You know, so have fun, folks. Let's stop and think about it. It's much more fun to just go out there, trade with people, live our lives, and live them free and unfettered. Unfettered with the ravages of any tyranny, anyone making demands upon you. You know, there's no need for making any demands. And at this point in time, we've got to agree to get together to A, keep the Democrats out of there, and B, bring some justice back to the world. Bring some nice morals back into the world. Bring a righteous way of living that we have learned over our last 200 years of existence. Learn that the biggest rule out there, thou shalt not hassle. Don't forget the golden rule, folks. Treat others the way you want to be treated. And that's all we're asking here. It's not too much to ask. You know, that you make no demands of anyone without offering something in return. And understanding fully that whoever it is that you're trying to make a deal with has the freedom to walk away from it. The same as anyone making demands from you, you know, has no right to command you to do anything. You've always had the freedom to walk away from anything that you didn't want to enter into. And shouldn't go along with a government that is trying to take too much from you. Now, don't forget, they are only taking it because of your goodwill, because of the fact that you have been willing to do it. You know, stop and think about the Boston Tea Party years ago. Those people threw a riot over 0.25% raise in taxes on their tea. 0.25% of a raise in taxes caused them people to go into a riot. And yet we sit still and let them take 25, 30, 35, 40% of your pay. It's nuts. And the more that you do, the more help you, the more services you provide for other people, the better the product, the more of the products that you provide. And And all of a sudden, because you've made so many people happy, well, you're going to be penalized even further by paying more taxes. Wrong way to go about things. But at any rate, folks, we have hit the top of the hour here. Once again, the place is starting to dim. The lights are going down. The tables are getting piled high with the chairs. The Mater D, well, I see his keys hanging in the door, but I don't see him anywhere. And his truck is running outside. The lights are on, and there's smoke pouring out of his exhaust. However, I don't see anyone in the front seat tonight, so I don't know what he's got lined up. But at any rate, folks, it's time to close the cafe up here. I want to thank everyone for coming aboard. I want to thank Kaim and PSACS for definitely coming on here and giving us a great pep talk, man. It was excellent. I loved all your points. And I want to thank all our listeners out there and everybody that helped out with the room tonight. You have listened to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network, broadcast from Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders Voice Room at paltalk.com. Thanks a lot, folks. We will see you again next week. Same time, same station. Good night.